Welcome to the Maine Monitor Radio Hour. This is Stephanie McPheeters, the deputy editor of the Maine Monitor. The Maine Monitor is the nonpartisan, independent publication of the Maine Center for Public Interest Reporting. We are a nonprofit organization dedicated to informing Mainers through investigative and explanatory journalism and empowering them to be engaged citizens. This program is a collaboration between WERU-FM and the Maine Monitor. For more information on our work and how to support the Maine Monitor, please visit themainemonitor.org. This month, I'm here with our environmental reporter, Emmett Gartner, to discuss his ongoing reporting on Maine's aging dams. Emmett, thanks for being here today.
Good to be here.
So I know you were up in Bucksport a few weeks ago for a live journalism event at the Alamo Theater, and you were discussing three dams that are in the process of being abandoned. And you talked to an engineer and a couple local officials about, you know, what that could mean for the lakes and the waterfront properties that depend on these aging structures for, you know, for their existence. I think it was a really fascinating conversation, and we're going to let listeners hear it for themselves later in this episode. But first, I'm hoping you can set the scene a little bit. What prompted you to look at this debate, and why is it something that Mainers should pay attention to?
Sure. So at the time, I had been reporting both on Maine's dams and plans for their removal, as well as this company that owns the former Bucksport Mill and how its ownership of the landfill attached to the mill was out of compliance with some state environmental standards. So I had already both of these topics on my radar. And in June, the company that owns those assets filed a petition to abandon and forfeit ownership of these three dams in Hancock County. One holds back water that provides drinking water for the town of Bucksport and operations for a local power plant. And all three have large implications on property value, recreation, you name it. I mean, it's just what you would expect around a lake in Maine. And when this petition was submitted, there are a lot of unanswered questions. The Bangor Daily News reported on it first, and that's how it came to my attention. And then moving forward with the petition process, just more and more questions arose. This was the first time that a dam owner had followed the statute in Maine for dam abandonment to the phase that they reached. I mean, once they kind of had their petition approved, that was a watershed moment. So from then on out, I just had questions constantly. I mean, same as the residents, about how this is implemented, what happens to the landowners and their property lines and the town's drinking water, and it just kept moving forward along with the process of abandonment. So when we sat down a few weeks ago in Bucksport, all these questions were kind of swirling around. Since then, legislation has been introduced to address some of the lapses that officials think exist in the statute for dam abandonment, and the state environmental protection agency has started to kind of put a little more force onto the company to ensure that it follows all of the rules outlined in the statute. So that's pretty much where we are now, and that's what we're digging into at that Bucksport event.
You know, I know in some ways it's kind of a unique situation. It's the first time this abandonment process is playing out in Maine, but my understanding is that there are similar debates playing out elsewhere. Can you tell us about, you know, what's happening with some of Maine's other dams?
Yeah, sure. So one of the more recent larger scale decisions on dams that has unfolded is one with a dam on the Piscataquis River in Dover Foxcroft, which mm-hmm. the town owns. It used to produce electricity, but it hasn't done so in more than 18 years and hasn't had any maintenance in that time as well. The town voted in last year to keep the dam as opposed to looking for grant funding to remove it. So over this past year, they've been kind of seeing what the implications of that are. They have to spend millions of dollars to get it up to federal standards. Otherwise, they'll start to get fined quite heavily. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which regulates electricity producing dams, has given the town lots of extensions, but they're only going to do so for so much longer. So a few weeks ago, a committee addressing what the next steps for the town are revealed recent studies that showed if the town pursues dam improvement to meet federal standards and improve the fishway that passes endangered Atlantic salmon up the Piscataquis River to its historic spawning grounds at the headwaters of the river, then along with just the general maintenance repairs for the structure itself, which is in poor condition, it'll cost more than $10 million. And that would result in significant tax hikes for the residents of Dover Foxcroft. If your property is valued at $350,000, in one scenario, you would see your tax bill increase by $600 a year. So it's just a really important kind of thing to think about when we're talking about dam removal in Maine, because other towns are going to face this question. And what you're seeing in Dover Foxcroft is the result of what it means to keep a dam, especially one that's federally regulated. So it's really interesting. And I will be following to see what the town decides over the next few months.
Yeah. Well, it's just a really complex process, both sort of on the regulatory side, but then in terms of, you know, what it ends up meaning for these towns and taxes and all of that. Well, we're going to let people listen to the Bucksport conversation because I think it was really interesting and just sort of dive into that debate. And yeah, this is something we'll be following. So yeah, thanks again.
Good evening, everyone. It's great to see so many faces of people I've exchanged emails with over the past year or so. My name is Emmett Gardner. I'm the environmental reporter for the Maine Monitor. Been here for a year and a half and covering dams specifically for the past, like I said, year. That reporting most recently encompassed a four-part series on Maine dams that was published last November. It spanned from hydropower dams and their position in Maine's renewable energy portfolio to the state of Maine's dam safety program and how dams are overseen by the state and monitored for their condition and safety, as well as removal debates and issues with fish passage at other dams across Maine. Tonight, I am joined by a panel of three esteemed guests to help me dive into some of those specific aspects of my reporting. Furthest to the right is Susan Lessard, Bucksport's town manager and also chair of the Maine Board of Environmental Protection. This is a board that oversees the Department of Environmental Protection. And then we have Gina Bouchong, Orland Board of Selectmen member and one of the local officials spearheading the four-town committee that is considering municipal dam ownership of two of the dams, Toddy Pond, Alamosic Lake. And then lastly, right to my right here is James Voigt, hydrologist and water resources engineer for Streamworks and lead author of the dams chapter of the 2024 report card on Maine's infrastructure by the American Society of Civil Engineers. So we're going to kick things off with a little presentation by James, who's going to give us the ins and outs of the components of dams, as well as some of the key findings from this report card on Maine's infrastructure, specifically Maine's dams. I believe we have a quick PowerPoint presentation that will be put up on the screen now.
Yeah, so it's a little less PowerPoint presentation, as much as I hope they would be exhibits that I could reference. The light is shining right in our eyes up here. So we'll try and get through these a little bit and then jump back to the report card. But As Emmett shared, I'm James White. I was the lead author on the DAMS chapter for the American Society of Civil Engineers. So it's a professional society. Every 4 years, we put together these report cards in a way similar to your children receiving their letter grades from home. So we can communicate the state of our nations and our state's infrastructure in kind of an easy to understand way. At ASCE, what we really advocate for is trying to get to B. B is the grade that's adequate for current conditions, and A is kind of top of the line, suitable for future conditions, future population growth, everything that we've got coming to us in the future, but it's really B's our target. Overall, Maine was mostly in the C's and D's, and we'll spend a little bit of time talking about the dams. So one of the things that's interesting for me as an engineer working with dams is that in contrast to the rest of the infrastructure that's in the report card, bridges, roads, sewers, dams just kind of blend into the landscape. And people don't always realize that it's infrastructure. These are really highly engineered structures in some regards, or structures that were built just well enough long ago that they lasted until now. And now we're trying to engineer them to last for another 100 years. But when we're talking about a dam, there's a lot of different styles. I've kind of got a pretty typical section up there of what we'd call an earthen dam. Generally, they impound flow, and there's a narrower portion of the dam called the spillway where most of the water goes through. And so sometimes those two terms get mixed up. So the spillway is generally what's conveying the most flow. And then in certain situations, there's some low-level outlet works or gates to draw down the reservoir. So these are kind of our four main types of dams when we're looking at it as an engineer. Up on the left are earthen embankments. So we're really using earth, and we're building up kind of like a giant sandcastle of the block flow. We're really careful with the materials that go in there so they don't let too much water go through the dam. And there we've got a stable spillway that doesn't erode, normally concrete, something like that. We've got a lot of gravity dams around Maine, and those include both concrete and a lot of the masonry dams that are kind of built in the 17th and 18th century. They stay stable just by the sheer weight of that stone and that concrete pushing them against the earth. And that weight kind of digs them into the ground and prevents the water from pushing them downstream, just the force of weight. So we call them gravity dams. The two bottom ones are more structural. So the shape and the design of them, the actual concrete and the structural components like resist, kind of like trying to brace a wall or a house or something. If you've done any home repairs, that's kind of what they're doing. They're trying to brace the whole structure. So they work great. They're really fragile if those key structural elements go through. They're really dependent on these. The top two have a little bit more resilience just from the hulk, the mass of those structures. One of the interesting things about dams is there's a condition. And there's what we in the public talk about. It's good or bad. It's in bad condition. It's in good condition. Dams have this kind of other category, the hazard classification. That's really how we as engineers look at them. And the hazard class has nothing to do with the actual physical condition of the dam, but has everything to do what happens if that dam fails or misoperates. If that dam were to breach from overtopping during a flood, if we had an earthquake that destabilized it, if we had a bunch of wood get stuck on the gates and couldn't operate them and we had an overflow situation, what's at risk downstream? What's at risk upstream if these dams were to breach? And there's a hierarchy. We're at the low end. It's easier to go backwards. At the high end, the high hazard dams would kill people if they were to fail. They're really dangerous. We would expect people to die in the event that they breach during a sunny day, you know, earthquake, something like today, or a rainy day flood event. The significant hazards, the key distinction from them is they do not kill people, or we do not expect them to kill people when they breach. There might be significant environmental impacts. It might wash out state roads or bridges. It's kind of that order of magnitude, not quite rising to the loss of life situation. And then the lowest hazard would be the low hazard. So it's not the other categories. It's really how the low hazards get classified. But the low hazard still can cause millions of dollars in damage if you happen to have a driveway or a local road. Those can get washed out and still classified as low hazard. So these can still have pretty impactful impacts to the community immediately downstream. But how we regulate and how we design these dams changes with that hazard classification. So the higher that hazard classification is, the more stringent the design is, and the higher the standard we set for that dam, irregardless of its size. There's been at least 9 dam failures in the state of Maine that we know of. I believe almost all of these dams were low hazard, but as I mentioned earlier, we're still talking about millions of dollars of damage for some of these dams when they breach. So I've been able to work in some other states on dams, and one of the common themes that we've sensed is that dam safety is really not an issue until it is. And it normally takes people dying or becoming hurt that the state really steps in and funds and staffs these programs at the adequate levels to keep people safe. And so we've had some dam failures here. There's certainly worse that have occurred elsewhere, and we've been fortunate that it's been smaller, lower hazard dams. That doesn't mean that we won't have more significant dam failures happening in the future. So in the state of Maine, we've got about 1,000 dams across the state that we know of, and big asterisk on that we know of. There's no program or agency out there trying to catalog all the dams. That rule was repealed back in 1993, I think, to register your dam. So we know of at least 1,000. About 700 are actually subject to regulation, either at the state level or the federal level. If it's hydropower, it's generally regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission at the federal level. Everything else typically falls to the state, to MEMA, would be the main authority regulating the remainder dams. Of those 700 dams, the average age is 108, which is old. And when we think about bridges, I think everybody in this room would feel a lot less comfortable thinking about driving across a bridge that's an average age of 108 years old. We have dams in the state dating back to before the country was founded, and we aren't really building many new dams. So there's a lot that are, this being an average, 100, 150, 200 years old in service and in operation across the state. About a quarter of those are in the significant or high hazard category, where loss of life or significant and environmental or economic damage is expected. The breakdown on their condition is pretty interesting. We've got about half are in the fair or satisfactory category. And those are kind of terms that we use as engineers for okay, or okay, most of the time you should really think about what might happen during an earthquake or an extreme flood event. So they're generally okay in that category. The fair, poor, unsatisfactory are the terms that we use for, you really need to look at this today, kind of in that order. So the poor dams are generally ones that are in really poor condition. There's some concerning things that need to be addressed on a short-term basis. The unsatisfactory dams are generally reserved for ones that have immediate threats to their viability and their condition and pose significant risks to the downstream population, whether it's might be seepage, water going through the dam in a way that we didn't design or control that can erode material out. It might be leaning or failing structural members. Those types of things would go into that unsatisfactory condition, where generally we're recommending the owner take immediate actions in that condition, and often telling them to drain the impoundment at that point for fear of life and property downstream, depending on the situation. So ASCE kind of considers all these points: the condition, the hazard classification, the state of the dam safety program, regulation, what future needs are, resilience, and the overall need for dams, the capacity for dams in Maine when we assign our grades. We have a pretty holistic process that steps through that. We collaborate amongst ourselves as different authors in the state. So roads and dams and drinking water are all being assessed in the same way. We've got a lot of cross reviewers experience in both ways to make sure we're being fair and assigning the right category to each of these categories. All of that goes up to a national review and gets distributed amongst other professionals and individual disciplines, and making sure that we're kind of consistently scoring this. You know, we're in the same ballpark as New Hampshire, or relatively, that you can read the report, see the condition of the two programs, and come to the same conclusion. So they're really trying to make sure we're consistent amongst ourselves as a state, and each category is consistent across the country with the category that's assigned. That said, Maine's rating was a D plus. It's been there since the report card for Maine started in 2008, I believe. So it's been D plus for the last 8 years that I've been writing it, and for the 8 years before that as well. So there's a lot of room for improvement on Maine's dams. We had a couple key recommendations in the report card, and I want to draw a little distinction here. We have a lot of recommendations for the regulation of dams, for MEMA, for the authority overseeing dams. I like to point out these guys are doing a really good job. There's just not enough of them. It's a really difficult job that we have 1.5 full-time staff to monitor all 1,000 dams in the state. So you can imagine that if you're sitting in Augusta and your job that day is to inspect a dam up in the county, you're spending almost your entire workday just in the car, just to get to the dam to do the actual job that you were hired for. So there's a tremendous logistical effort just accessing some of these dams across the state that, in response to agency concerns 15, 20 years ago about not having enough staff to inspect the dams, the legislature's solution was to reduce the inspection frequency and reduce the demands for what the Maine Dam Safety Program has to do. The extra challenge is that right now, I am a licensed professional engineer, and I've got certain ethical and legal obligations that go into certifying designs. The Maine Dam Safety Program should be led by a professional engineer, but that position has been empty for over 3 years. The pay is pretty inadequate compared to what a lot of other jobs will pay. It's also a very demanding job. You know, when there is an emergency, you are leaving your family, you are going to remote parts of the state on little to no notice to help owners respond to an emergency. It's a very demanding job. It is tough to find people interested in taking on that responsibility for that pay. So the staff we do have done a great job. They really just need a lot more help. So we provided some recommendations to MEMA to increase funding, to allow additional staffing to help access some of these dams and fulfill their current legislative authorities. We've also recommended filling that dam safety inspector position, finding another professional engineer so there's somebody to collaborate with. Two minds are always going to be better than one, especially dams have so many unique aspects in terms of water, the soil interactions, the structural aspects. It gets pretty difficult for one person to serve all those different needs for all the different types of dams that we have in the state. Sustainable funding is a big one. So there's a lot of different ways to fund that program at an adequate staffing level, but finding a solution to fund it at those levels is really something that the legislature, we have recommended, resolve. Once we get to that point, we're really hopeful that the MEMA has the capabilities to start focusing on compliance, start focusing on enforcement, which they haven't had the time or resources to do, especially the last few years. Now, I'll interject real quick. One of their big challenges is that they're in the emergency response department. So 4 years ago when COVID hit, they were helping respond to COVID, not dealing with the dams. That's a unique challenge that our dam safety program has that most other states don't. I think Maine's the only one where it's in the emergency management agency, I believe. And then finally increasing the inspection frequencies once they have that adequate staffing. So that was really our recommendations. That MEMA's doing a great job. We just need more MEMA to really help maintain our dams in safe condition and protect our people here in Maine.
And that's a great segue, because as we've seen, MEMA's inadequacies have real world impacts. We're in part joined by local officials who are dealing with the abandonment process of three dams on Silver Lake, Toddy Pond, and Alamosic Lake, which are high hazard and in unsatisfactory condition. One of them, Silver Lake Dam, was last inspected in 2021, and the report there had immediate recommendations for addressing structural deficiencies with the dam. Those findings were never followed up on, and that in part has kind of led us to the even murkier situation that's facing these five towns. So town manager Lessard and select person Bouchong, I was wondering if we could kind of just trace things back to when you first heard about Bucksport Mill LLC's intentions to either sell these three dams or pursue the abandonment process before that petition was finally filed in July.
You're listening to the Maine Monitor Radio Hour on WERU FM. This month, you're hearing environmental reporter Emmett Gartner and a panel of experts discuss Maine's dams.
The five towns involved, Bucksport, Orland, Surrey, Penobscot, and Blue Hill, were not the first entities to learn of this process. The first entities contacted by Bucksport Mill were lake associations, Toddy Pond and Alamoosuc, which when the communities found out seemed quite interesting that the property owner would be offering these mills to entities without the financial or infrastructure ability to care for them. Once we became aware that that process was going on, the five communities and the two lake associations formed a committee that met every 2 weeks to discuss options available and to try and figure out the process that would be followed when Bucksport Mill LLC filed a petition. They first filed one in July that was inadequate and was rejected by the department. Second one was filed in October, which was eventually accepted by the department. But this law that was enacted in 1996 to allow entities to walk away from ownership or responsibility for these dams has never been carried out fully in the state of Maine. It was passed in 96, but the DEP has never processed one of these from beginning to end. So this guinea pig that is this situation, I would like to think, isn't what was contemplated when the legislature passed this law. My guess is it was passed to address the umpteen hundred of them that are in the backwoods somewhere that held back a logging pond or some very minor thing, not three high hazard dams, which one of them of which is a public water supply and an industrial water source for Bucksport Generation, without which it can't operate in its current configuration, or Alamoosuc and Toddy, which are major recreational lakes in not only this region, but in the state, and are substantial portions of the property tax valuations of each of these communities. So we've met, we've engaged attorneys. We've had the lake associations, and the Toddy Pond Lake Association has started a Save Our Ponds program. It has a Facebook page, it has a GoFundMe page to raise money to assist the towns with the legal fees that we are accumulating that none of us budgeted for. We couldn't have seen this coming. This wasn't an anticipated event, but I guess without going on for too long, this is a process. We've learned that the law as it's written isn't necessarily on the side of the communities in terms of what is required. We have to date received zero information from Bucksport Mill, in spite of the fact that all the towns have requested information with which we would need to have in order to consider assuming ownership of these dams. As I've said repeatedly, I can't imagine standing up in front of a public hearing in the town of Bucksport and saying, hi, Silver Lake Dam is, they want to abandon it. I don't know what it's going to cost. I don't know what shape it's in. I don't know when it was last, what the last inspection really said, but please vote for this. You know, I mean, that it's unreasonable to think that property taxpayers would do that with no information. And so, well, there's been a lot of people who want this solved right now. Just take it and figure it out later. We don't have the luxury of doing that because people have to vote for this, and you can't ask people to vote if they have no information. And so this process and getting information or trying to, or appealing to the DEP to not allow the petition to move forward because they have not acted in good faith in providing information that a new owner would need. So we're spending a lot of time. There's been so many people working on this and volunteers. The Lake Associations have, if anyone deserves a round of applause, it's these associations who have really been busting their butt to get people notified, to get people engaged, to raise money. They've just been awesome. There have been people who have done studies of what happens if you let the water out. What do these lakes look like if you let the water out? And it's terrifying. I mean, they are high hazard. It's more terrifying because we lose a quarter of Bucksport if Silver Lake has someone dropped a bomb on it tomorrow. But even the idea of a slow release eliminates public water supply, a fire department, hydrant system, a sewer system that relies on this public water. You know, these are major components that, and we didn't set these dams up. We didn't build these things. They were the creation of the industry that was here for many years and utilized them in their processes. And now they're gone, and Bucksport Mill LLC, which had an agreement with the entity that was going to build a salmon farm here to pay for water, which was ended in 2023. And I believe that's what triggered desire to relinquish the dams. There's no longer funding stream that they're getting supported. I've talked too long, I apologize.
No worries at all. It's all very vital information. And just to provide an overview of the statute and where we are in terms of the abandonment process. So there's a 180-day consultation period overseen by DEP where the dam owner can consult with local municipalities or other interested parties who might take over ownership of the dams. That's where we are right now. Once that period is up, it's sort of up to DEP to accept that the consultation has, like Town Manager Lessard said, occurred in good faith. And if they give their stamp of approval, then the dams would go to the review of three main state agencies. First on that list would be Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Each of these departments would consider the dams and the relation to the agency's responsibilities and public value. So for IFNW, it would be looking at the dam's relationship to the water it's holding behind and the fisheries habitat that might exist. After that, the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry gets a bite at the apple. They review the recreation value of the dam, other habitat considerations. And then lastly is MEMA, Emergency Management Agency. Each of these agencies gets 60 days to consider. So altogether, I mean, if they use their full allotted time, it would be 180 days. MEMA is looking for safety considerations. If the dams were released, what kind of hazard would remain. MEMA does not own any dams, as we've gone over. They're quite underfunded as is, and in conversations I've had with officials there, they could not imagine taking over ownership of dams with as high hazard and high maintenance needs as these. And after those agencies review, and if they pass up on the dams, then DEP oversees a process in which the dams are released, the water behind the impoundments, and kind of it's categorized as like the least impactful way, whatever that means. As Susan said, whatever is left over is bound to be impactful, even if it's done in the most minimally impactful way, because what's left are mudflats. So that's where the process is now. I was wondering if we could speak a little bit about what the latest efforts from the 4 and 5 town committees are. There is legislation that was introduced at the beginning of the session by Representative Nina Milken of Blue Hill that would kind of extend this consultation process and require dam owners to provide more information on the status of their dams to DEP. That's currently being considered by the state legislature. And I was wondering if you could also speak about some of the town hall meetings that are happening among the 4 towns and how you all are thinking about that and approaching things moving forward.
Sure. One little addition to the timeline that you laid out: with the first 180 days, a municipality can ask for an extension of additional 180 days. And that's something we already know that we're going to have to request that, because we've got no information from the dam owner, so we couldn't possibly make the decision. So that's already something that we're keying up, that we want that 180 day extension of the municipal consultation period. One of the things to follow up on what Sue said is the 5 towns are committed to working together and not letting this be a divide and conquer kind of situation. We're committed to joint messaging, working, our attorneys are working together. We really need to be unified in what we're doing. But with that said, we're all thinking down the road. We're not putting our heads in the sand because clearly these people want to get rid of these dams. So we're all thinking, what are the potential outcomes that could happen, and trying to really be proactive in thinking through some of those. We realize that Silver Lake has probably a very different path than Alamosic and Toddy. As Sue said, Silver Lake is the water supply. It's hooked up with Bucksport Generation. It's actually not in the same watershed with the other two dams. So, there'll probably be two different paths to go down. So we've been working with the 4 towns that are involved in Alamosic and Toddy Pond. While those dams are in Orland, all of Alamosic is Orland property. Toddy Dam, however, that lake has 4 different towns involved: Surrey, Penobscot, Blue Hill, and Orland. So they're in the same watershed. So we have a lot more joint ability to deal with it collectively. And we've been working with our bipartisan state legislature. Nina Milliken and Steve Bishop have been outstanding in pulling together a bipartisan group of legislators to help us think through what our options might be in the future, and have introduced draft legislation to figure out how to create a watershed district that could manage these two dams. And we are charged now, between now and the end of February, with really filling in that legislation of exactly what we're talking about, how it would work, how it would be paid for, who's going to be involved in managing it. The advantage to this kind of option is that it takes the liability of ownership away from the towns and puts it in a quasi-municipal organization. Seems like an incredibly feasible opportunity that would serve us all well. And we're in the process, because this is such a quick turnaround, trying to get this all put together by the end of February. We've been doing an awful lot of background work, talking about the Save Our Ponds group. They've been doing a gigantic survey of all of the businesses from Ellsworth all the way to Bucksport. What impacts would it have, so people understand not just the property values, but what's it going to do to businesses? Right now, in the preliminary stage, 92 of the businesses that have responded said it would make a significant impact on their business. Some have said they'd have to close within the next few years. So it's not just property owners, and it's not just recreation, but it has significant economic value to our whole region. So we're trying to get this design and figure out how it would function. So we're having a series of what we're calling public input sessions. And we've got a survey up online trying to get public input, because this is something, as Sue said, even though we're doing the legislation, before it's ever put in place, it will require town votes from all four of the towns involved in this. So we really want to have citizen input. This isn't where we want to dictate and say, you got to go vote for this. It's like, help us design this. Help us think through these options. So we're having four different meetings. The first one is actually tomorrow night in Orland at the Alamoosuc Lakeside Inn. And then that's followed on Monday by the one in Surrey. And on, Wednesday, it's Blue Hill. And Thursday is in Penobscot. All the meetings start at 6 o'clock. And we really encourage people to come and participate in these meetings. We'll also be recording them and we're not live Zooming it, but we'll have a recording. We'll post the recordings and summaries of the meetings and the input we get from people. We'll use that input along with other things to make sure that we get this done by the end of February so that we can give it to our legislators and get it in committee and hopefully get it voted out and at least gives us an option, because we really want to be proactive about this and not just wait till we're at the end of the process and then go, oh, yeah, maybe we'll take them. So we want to think it through. So,
great. Thank you for that overview. And kind of going on from that potential proposed legislation for a quasi-municipal entity to take over dams, there's also plans potentially for bills that could create a revolving loan fund that could be drawn on to cover maintenance costs for the most dilapidated high-risk dams in the state. Other bill that could strengthen Maine's dam safety program and address some of the chronic underfunding and understaffing that James highlighted earlier. And that kind of leads us back to MEMA and the dam safety program's current position, because underlying this situation in Hancock County is the condition of these dams and the unknown factor of the maintenance needs that they might require. So James, I was wondering if you could talk about other dam safety programs that have kind of bulked up their authority and their oversight of dams to allow them to kind of compel dam owners to take the recommendations or maintenance requests from state dam safety officials seriously and follow up on them or compel them to do so. And anyway, I'm wondering if you're familiar with any kinds of laws that kind of outline that for other dam safety programs, or just in general, what enforcement mechanisms were recommended in Maine's infrastructure report card.
You're listening to the Maine Monitor Radio Hour on WERU FM. This month, you're hearing environmental reporter Emmett Gartner and a panel of experts discuss Maine's dams.
Yeah, I think in addition to the American Society of Engineers, there's a special professional society for dam safety. It's called the Association of State Dam Safety Officials, and the people that can comprise that organization are really dam safety officials. They're Colorado Dam Safety, New Hampshire Dam Safety, all these different state entities that are really contributing to that program. They've come up in concert with some of the federal agencies that own and regulate dams, model dam safety guidelines that are really our go-to for recommending what a dam safety program should be. We do work in several states. Kind of the pattern that we've seen is that it really takes a death emergency or very significant dam issue to kind of force the issue to come up to the top of the priority list in the state legislatures. But most states have gone through that process. New York, I know, has done one after several dam failures. They got a fairly robust program. Vermont was in that process, and especially after the 2023 flooding that impacted the state and they had several dam breaches, they've really kind of turbocharged that. But what we see in a lot of states, and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is a good reference too. There's different inspection frequencies for the dams depending on their hazard. You're looking for immediate issues that might develop over time. And then there's normally some sort of regular, maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's 20 years, some sort of cycle where you do a deeper dive on the dam. You're making sure it's got sufficient capacity to convey the design flood. You're confirming its hazard classification. You know, that can change over time as development moves and encroaches into dam inundation zones. So there's kind of these different levels of checks that these different states and agencies have taken on. I think ultimately that's something that ASDSO and ASCE would encourage the state of dam or state of Maine towards, something that there's some sort of checking process, and whether that's entirely led by the state or whether the state's in more of an administrative role and requiring that of the dam owners themselves, I think is one of the important questions to consider for how Maine's program would operate.
I think Vermont, as an example, is really salient right now because with the July 2023 flooding, as James mentioned, I mean, there are 50 plus dams that were damaged or overtopped by water. Five dams failed. The Wrightsville Reservoir, which is a state-owned dam right outside of Montpelier, was in within 1 foot of overtopping. Montpelier already had significant flooding from that event, and they were just 1 foot away from a reservoir just up stream from town being overtopped and contributing even more floodwaters to an already ravaged town. Vermont didn't have the legal authority to even inspect dams. They couldn't go on to a dam owner's property without their permission until 2018. And since then, they've, like James said, supercharged their program. They went from only a few dam safety officials to now having 8 with plans for 12. In 2024, Vermont passed a $4 million dam safety revolving loan fund by the state legislature that is kind of similar to what I've heard described planned for Maine, that kind of draws on those funds to make repairs to dams in the worst condition. They also have more state dam safety inspectors, engineers to go out and look at these dams and judge their condition and make recommendations, and are, I believe, working on more legislation to, or have passed legislation that can better compel dam owners to kind of move in that direction in terms of maintenance. We're going to start opening up for questions in a few minutes, I believe, but I was wondering if we could just kind of have a reflection period here. If there's anything that's kind of come up that we think is especially pertinent as we consider, the legislative session, although it moves quickly, there's always potential for new bills that can kind of address these issues. I'm curious what other aspects of maybe the abandonment statute or the dam safety program that is currently unresolved that you all have been thinking about that could strengthen it, maybe empower municipalities a little bit more who are directly impacted by these dams. Any thoughts, if anyone wants to interject? Maybe we could start with our town officials.
The difficulty in this process, or one of the difficulties, there are many, is that while there's an abandonment statute that allows, if no new owner is found and the water is let out, that the ownership remains with the owner but it sits there, and any subsequent, it's a piece of infrastructure which is going to deteriorate and eventually cause more issues. And since we're a taxing authority and these things are taxed, if they simply don't pay their taxes for 3 years, it becomes a foreclosure question, which the communities would have to deal with anyway. It's certainly not what anyone wants to do, but in finding a solution, you know, taking ownership, active ownership, and then in some form, in Bucksport, there's the Bucksport Generation and Maine Water are both major players here who have, the other thing that wasn't mentioned is the significant number of legal obligations that go along with these dams. When these dams were established, the owner created deeded rights to dozens, if not hundreds, of property owners to guarantee lake levels in these lakes in front of their properties. And also, there is guaranteed water rights to now Maine Water, originally was to the town, for a certain amount of water to be available for the public water supply. And there's contractual and legal obligations to Bucksport Generation for water for their industrial process. And the legal work to determine what happens with all of these contractual obligations hasn't been done by anyone. And our attorney estimates it would take someone a year to work through trying to figure out what those legal obligations are. And so as we look at potential ownership, that's a big glaring that's not necessarily like many other dam situations, and what makes this even more challenging for the communities and the lake associations and the people who own properties with these deeds that guarantee them certain rights. So it's what felt complicated at the beginning continues to, you pull one string, you find three more. But I do think that we've been very fortunate in this process that we have a bipartisan effort with the legislators in this region. Representative Bishop is also a town councilor for the town of Bucksport. Nina Milken has done yeoman's work in contacting officials, as has Mr. Bishop, and having that bipartisan nature of these bills and things, I think, will help them make it through the legislature at a much faster speed than they would if we were picking sides here in terms of political affiliation. And that has not raised its ugly head in this thing. Everyone is sort of pulling in the same direction for a good solution to a problem that we didn't create or ask for, but are tasked with solving. So.
Yeah, I would definitely say that once we've made it through whatever process we're going to make it through, I think we'd all be very willing to help rewrite that statute from top to bottom, because it is just cumbersome. It is just not working for those of us who are having to go through the process. So probably not this session, but I'd be happy to spend time rewriting.
Yeah, and as we've said, I mean, these dams are kind of the guinea pig. I've heard concerns that this could show other dam owners just the playbook on how to go through the abandonment process once the waters have been tested, and if they go through it, if DEP ultimately approves the forfeiture of the dams and it's not as hairy as maybe other dam owners thought it might be, it could set up a precedent that others could follow, which is kind of exposing the loose language in the statute and kind of the bumpiness of the process that creates.
You've been listening to the Maine Monitor Radio Hour, a collaboration between WERU-FM and the nonpartisan independent publication of the Maine Center for Public Interest Reporting. To learn more about our reporting on the issue, visit themainemonitor.org. Questions or comments related to the radio program can be sent to news@weru.org. The Maine Monitor Radio Hour is broadcast on the first Thursday of every month at 4 p.m., You can also listen on the WERU app, subscribe to the show as a podcast, or download archived shows at weru.org. For the Maine Monitor Radio Hour, I'm Stephanie McFeeters, and this is Community Radio WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill.